Hey guys. So, full disclosure, this is going to be a very serious and heavy intro to this episode because, you know, sometimes life happens and it's very, very unfair a lot of times. I haven't even gotten to recording any of the other parts of this episode, and I don't really anticipate doing that until maybe Wednesday or even Thursday. But today, Tuesday, May 20th, I woke up this morning and I checked my phone, and the very first thing that I saw was the news dropping that Adam Raimi, who was the vocalist of Dropout Kings, has passed away. I've been able to see, in this little bit of time span, that or at least since it happened, since finding out about it. Sorry if I sound like flustered. I've been able to see like the way that the scene has reacted to this, and the way that people who knew Adam have reacted to it. And going off of their reactions, I don't know if I can call Adam a friend or say that we were like we really knew each other like that. But I do have a story. I do have some things to say. I believe it would have been like late 2019 or early 2020. You know, it was sometime after I followed him on Instagram. He would occasionally check my story, and we had like a handful of DMs talking about, you know, music and tattoos. The latter part specifically when I had just gotten my, my left hand done a little bit, and he was like, oh man, that looks sick. And I was just like, yeah, man, I appreciate it. You know, I'm trying to catch up to you someday or something like that. And like I said, we didn't talk that much, but, he just like reached out at random points and, just for no reason other than to talk. Like it was, I guess at the time I thought it was strange, but like understanding now, like the way that he connected with fans of the band, he genuinely cared about everybody. The thing that has always stuck with me, and especially now, is going to stick with me pretty much forever, I would imagine. I was never planning to share this, and I've never told anybody this before, but Adam actually reached out to me after my cat Mikasa passed away a couple of years ago, and he just offered his condolences and said that he was sorry for my loss, which he really, really did not need to do. But it's things like that which really tell me the kind of person that Adam was, and seeing the way that others on social media have talked about him and similar things, like I said, about nice gestures to fans and supporters through DMs, and just being a good fucking friend and helpful hand to the people around him. Adam was so loving and caring, you know, and all of that is why I emphatically do not like that the last time I ever spoke about Dropout Kings on this show while Adam was alive was when I reviewed their 2023 album Riot Music, like, really poorly. I did not like that record, and now that's kind of on record audibly as the last thing I said about his work, and that's gonna bother me. And maybe it shouldn't, but it does. This whole thing is just really, really fucked up and sad and unfair. And, you know, right now I'm thinking about his bandmates, his family, his wife, his son, who's not even 2 years old, I believe. As of right now, I don't believe that a GoFundMe has been set up just yet. I would imagine that by the time I go in to record the rest of the episode, it will have already dropped. So I will include the link to the GoFundMe page to help out Adam's family with, you know, whatever it is that they might need at this time. It's going to be in the description of this episode. I'll also include it in the description for the episode on Instagram and Twitter. So, you know, if any of you guys are able to, please, please consider helping out his family right now. So what's going to happen now moving forward for this episode, I'm going to play the normal intro and then go into whatever it is I'm going to say when I resume recording this tomorrow or whenever I do, and I am going to use my favorite Dropout Kings song ever as the intro and outro music for this episode. It's going to be the title track to the Glitch Gang EP from 2020. I think that is the best embodiment of what I'm going to remember this band by and what I'm going to remember Adam's work by. And then what I will remember him as a person by is the utmost graciousness that he showed me and the outpour of love that he's been shown since his passing, because you do not get that without being an amazing man who is going to be so incredibly missed. Okay, I am, I'm putting this part in, this part you're hearing right now, after I have completed the episode on Thursday, May 22nd, because, I was looking through social media right now, and there's another really, 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 really fucking bad, event that has happened to the scene. Not every, detail's out there right now, so that's why I sound like, puzzled, I guess. I don't, okay, there was a plane crash that, killed everybody on board. Not every name has been released, but we do know of two people who, lost their lives in this crash. Dave Shapiro, who was the owner of, Sound Talent Group, he was a music agent who, he built up a lot of bands in the scene. A lot of bands out there, you know, they are where they are right now because of Dave. They owe their big breaks to Dave. He was very, very instrumental in, you know, like the foundation of a lot of bands that you guys out there love and listen to. And another confirmed name is Daniel Williams. He was the original drummer for The Devil Wears Prada. He was with the band from their inception in 2005 up until, I want to say it's like a little bit before Transit Blues dropped in 2016. And, you know, he is confirmed to be a victim of this crash. And like I said, guys, there really aren't any other details right now. It's, I don't know if all the details will be out after the episode has been released, so that's why it sounds incomplete right now. This really is not how I wanted to follow up on the Adam stuff from the, you know, the previous story I just explained. But like I said with Adam, life happens, and it's very, very unfair and fucked up a lot of times, and this is another instance of that. So, I'm gonna go into like an extended moment of silence right now for the episode before getting into the intro, which is like a bunch of like jokes and other shit that I recorded earlier today. Yeah, guys. Genuinely, just fucking, you know, just be there for your loved ones, man. Be there for your family, your friends, the people you care about, the people who care about you, because as cliche as it sounds, like, you really, really, you never know what's gonna happen. And this week in particular in alternative music has been a very, very strong and painful reminder of all that.
Ulterior.
Alright, right now it's the morning of Thursday, and last night was game one of the fucking... Bro, what the fuck? How? It was game one of the Knicks and the Pacers, Eastern Conference Finals. Knicks are up like 14 or some shit like that, 230, something within that range left. It looks like a lock. It looks like they're taking game one. And then fucking Aaron Nesmith and the magnet ball just start fucking torching the Knicks, and it's getting fucking spooky. And then Tyrese Halliburton hits that fucking, what was believed to be the dagger, but toe on the line, and then this motherfucker's there doing the fucking Reggie Miller choking emote, and I'm like, there's no fucking way this happened. And he just hit the choking emote. Like, bro, you guys better fucking win this game then if you hit the choking emote. And then they did. And then the Pacers took game one of the biggest and worst choke jobs I'm pretty sure I've ever seen in professional sports. And the reason why I sound like fired up about this is because I am rooting for the Knicks right now in not just the Eastern Conference Finals, but the rest of the playoffs. Like, I have picked the Knicks as my team for this run. And look what happened to me. Look what happened to them. Look what happened to New York. It's wild, man. And then on the other end of basketball news, Giannis, don't you want to come to San Antonio? I saw your tweets, bro. I said, I know you told fans you love Mexican food and you love Eddie Guerrero. We can get you culture here, man. We gonna set you up right in San Antonio. So come to the Spurs, man. Come play with Wembanyama. And there's probably like a bunch of other things I could talk about right now, from sports, pop culture, all that type of shit. I'm gonna mention this about scene music right quick before I go into the intro and all that stuff. When I did the review for Even in Arcadia by Sleep Token, I said at the end of it that more than likely the album was going to be number one on Billboard 200, and it was, which makes it like one of the, I was gonna say one of the very few like scene albums to ever be number one, but I think if you like, if you boil it down to just like metalcore adjacent stuff and things of that nature and like where Sleep Token come from, it might be the only album in history to ever be number one. Like, Bring Me didn't get there. A Day to Remember didn't get there. I think of Mice and Men and Memphis Mayfire got, like, really close in their heydays, but they weren't the band to do it. And then now Sleep Token is. And there's been, you know, a lot of discourse still about Sleep Token. And the only thing I will say, if you are genuinely mad that Sleep Token got to number one or anything like that, cry, 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 worship, cry, worship, cry, worship, cry, worship, cry, worship, cry, 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 cry. Anyways, I want to get to the episode now because there is a lot of music to get through. We've got some singles by the likes of President and Lorna Shore, and then maybe a few others I want to talk about. And then the focus of the episode is primarily going to be on the five records from last week that I reviewed, and I'm talking about the Callous Style Boys, Sleep Theory, Arm's Length, Bury Tomorrow, and Novelist. Thank you guys so much for tapping in, and I really hope y'all enjoy this episode. Like I said, there's a lot to talk about, so let's get into it right the fuck now. First song up is from a new, mysterious, and masked band named President and their debut single, In the Name of the Father. All right, so I probably have like a fair bit of things to dive into regarding President, because I did not speak about the like literal spawning of this band out of nowhere back when it happened, when the lineup for this year's Download Festival was announced and people noticed that there was a band listed on the bill by the name of President. And if you searched President, there was nothing. No music, no real presence of any kind, no paper trail, like nothing. It was like this act, President, just kind of appeared out of nowhere, and that's what it really felt like. Some of the initial teases for In the Name of the Father made it clear that this is supposed to be kind of like a an anonymous band and a masked band type of a thing, similarly to Sleep Token. And I don't know exactly what it was about President that made some people in the Sleep Token fandom try to make a connective thread between the two projects. I think it came down to, beyond the two of them being masked projects, they also like follow the same people or have like similar representation or something of that sort. And I think like the sleep token craze and fever that is ongoing right now, it definitely helped the launch of In the Name of the Father and just the timing of it, you know, coming out 1 week after even in Arcadia. And when I listened to this song for the very first time last week, I was just blown away by it. Not just by the way that it sounded, because it sounds fucking quality and pristine, but also just the packaging and the presentation of this entire project. The music video, I think, is really, really well shot, and it adds to that kind of like dark and brooding atmosphere that is set forth by President. This is a project that has been able to live up to every bit of hype and anticipation that it has set for itself and the fans have set for President. This is going to be something very interesting and exciting to watch play out, I believe, and I am absolutely, definitely excited for anything and everything President-related in the future. There is finally some new activity out of the camp of Lorna Shore, and they have a brand new album and a full tour to go along with it. Here is a new single called Oblivion. The new album is called I Feel the Ever Black Festering Within Me, and it will be releasing on September 12th. It's been a minute now since I've been able to mention Lorna Shore on this podcast before, as it has now been, at this point in the timeline, almost 3 years since Pain Remains dropped back in 2022, which I've expressed before is a review that I handled in a way that I, like, genuinely do regret. And my hope with this new album is that I have the chance to sort of, you know, like, rectify that and reestablish the love and admiration that I have for Lorna Shore, because there are honestly few bands right now whose success I am more proud of than this band. Like, so much so to the point that even as somebody who generally stays away from longer songs, because that's not really my forte or something that I am overtly interested in, seeing a runtime of over 8 minutes for Oblivion, it drew up this intense level of excitement within myself, because I know that Lorna Shore have the ability to paint that canvas malevolently and in such a way that is so memorable, you know what I mean? Oblivion takes every twist and turn that I would expect out of a Lorna Shore song. Will Ramos sounds like a fucking demon and as ferocious as he ever has. The song has so much depth and rhythm to it, and it never feels like it loses its steam at any point in its duration. I fucking love Oblivion. I cannot wait to get into this new era of Lorna Shore and be able to, you know, speak about this band the way that I feel they have earned the right to be spoken about. We have a brand new song out by Sharia Moore. It is 1-800-PARANOID featuring Saxo Rose. It's paranoia. We sleep so close, but I don't know ya. It drives me crazy when you call my name. But we both did run and gave it such a shame. It's paranoia. It's paranoia. This is part of the EP Chrome Hearts, which is dropping on June 5th, so about 2 weeks out from now. I consider Sharia Moore to be a day one band for this podcast, because their entire discography has been detailed on this show, and, you know, I'll have a couple of stories to tell about them when the EP is out. And I will say that I think 1-800-PARANOID has the exact kind of attitude and bounce to it that fits right in with everything else from this band that I have just absolutely gushed over the last couple of years. It is fast-paced without being frantic. The chorus delivers on this big room vibe. The feature spot from Saxo Rose adds a lot of its quirkiness that I think really helps the last minute or so of the song really soar into the sky and become this instant gem in the band's library, and I have zero doubt whatsoever about that ending up as the case for the remainder of this EP once everybody gets to listen to it and enjoy it and hopefully run up the numbers and continue to elevate the name Sharia more, because this band absolutely deserves that by this point. The final single that I will kind of give a spotlight to for the episode is by Linkin Park. It is Let You Fade. So this was the final new song on the From Zero Deluxe Edition, which just dropped last week, and I have talked about From Zero extensively on this show before because it was the 2024 record of the year, but I am going to continue talking about it every single chance that I get, because I never thought that contemporary conversations about Linkin Park were ever possible until a few months ago, and I do not want to ever take that for granted. Let You Fade has this fucking massive chorus that Emily is able to like really take control of and command of, and sort of like blend her voice into the almost raw sounding production of the instrumentation behind her. I think this song has a lot of the core elements of both new and old Linkin Park. It fits right in with From Zero and its narrative. And I really believe that had this song been on the original tracklist for the record last November, it could have ended up being like one of my favorite songs of the year. I think it has that kind of power behind it. And like any time that I get to appreciate new Linkin Park, I do so. And again, I really try to cherish that because I never thought that would even be like a real reality that I could settle in. These were the remaining singles from last week that I gave either a 4 or a 5-2 in the reviews on social media. Wide Awake by Archers, On Your Lips by Beauty School Dropout, Taste, which is a Sabrina Carpenter cover by Crooked Ways, Limbo by Deadlands, June by Dwayne, Bittersweet Scars of My Past by Dream State, Eternal Harvest by From Joy, A Glimpse of Habit by House of Anxiety, September 29 by Letter Sent Home, Still Love by Loss and Separation, War of Love by Mortal Reminder, Piranha by Nova Twins, Oblivion by Scary Kids, Scaring Kids featuring Cat Leon, Infinity of Horrors by Shadow of Intent, Gumbo by Slay Squad, Where Were You by Solence, Nothing Hurts When You're Hollow by San Atlantic, To Fade Quietly by Sugar Spine featuring Half Me, Worthy by The Home Team, and Broken by Worlds for Cinema featuring J.D. Cliff. There was one song that I gave a 3 to, and it was I'll Tell You by Hazel. Okay, so here is the thing about Hazel. The first song of his that I listened to for this year and this, you know, sort of like review period of Ulterior, it was Take Me Down, which was my favorite song the week that it dropped. And I think Take Me Down is this incredible song, and it set like this standard in my head of what I thought Hazel was going to be and what he would do. And then every song thereafter, and none of the songs are like necessarily bad. They just sound like kind of dull in some ways compared to how brilliant I think Take Me Down is. And, you know, unfortunately, I'll Tell You is another instance of that. I want to see Hazel turn it around, but the output of songs, I believe it's like 4 of them since Taking Me Down, not super promising, to be honest. And so now, having gotten through all of the singles, I am going to go now into the 5 albums for this week. This might end up being the most stacked week of the year for this show. There's probably going to be another week later on this year, maybe even a couple more that have, you know, this quality and quantity to them. But at least up to right now, at this point in the year, this is the most stacked, and I am very eager and excited to get into all of it. And I'm going to start off with maybe the most interesting sounding album of the year so far. We'll go with that. It is I Don't Want to See You in Heaven by the Callous Dawboys. All right, y'all, let's do this fucking thing. Let's have the Dawboys conversation. So the last time that I really spoke about the Callous Dawboys on this show in great length was almost 3 years ago now in 2022 off of the album Celebrity Therapist, which I remember at the time it was a record that I reviewed very favorably because I went into that album like maybe not having the highest of expectations or even the best of expectations because the Callous Dawboys was up to that point a band that I will admit to like not getting. And I say not getting in a weird way because like I don't want to say that I grew up on math rock, but like I grew up in a time where, you know, I was actively listening to bands like the Dillinger Escape Plan and Protest the Hero and The Fall of Troy. So like I do have a background in this kind of music, but the way that the Callous Dawboys went about it was not necessarily in tune with what I thought I liked about the genre, if that makes any kind of sense at all. And like truthfully, aside from one song on the album, which was What Is Delicious Who Swarms, which did make it into the 100 Best Songs of 2022 series, there's not really much of anything from Celebrity Therapist that I return to. So in the, you know, the 3 year span from that album to this one, my opinion and stance on the Callous Dawboys, it did kind of, you know, trend downward, I would say. I have a lot of friends who are super into this band, and, you know, I'm happy that they were able to, you know, stay connected to the Callous Dawboys. It was just not anything that I could actually, you know, adhere to or get into, really. So then that brings us to the start of the rollout for this new record, I Don't Want to See You in Heaven. And the initial like 1-2 punch of Two-Headed Trout and the Demon of Unreality Limping Like a Dog, that was like as big of a reminder, or not even a reminder, but like as big of a, I'm trying to figure out how to express it, but like I guess I'm trying to say that I the Callous Dawboys basically like sat me down and shot me in the face with a fucking shotgun. That's what this song or these two songs felt like, especially Two-Headed Trout. I could not get enough of like the creepy and chilling way that the verses on that song kind of sound and the way that they're set up atmospherically and how that goes into the chorus. And I thought that was maybe also the best that Carson has ever sounded as a vocalist. Two-Headed Trout was such a winning formula and one that really took me aback, even if I already knew how talented the Callous Dawboys really are. And it was every facet of Dawboys that settled in from there. The heavy bits, the experimental bits, the weird bits, like their entire character and persona started to resonate with me in a way that it never really had before. Lemon, which was another single, has this really catchy and infectious rhythm behind it that uses the snare drum kind of as like the heart and soul of all that, while Carson is dragging his voice along with everything going on around him. Like, it is just about fucking impossible to listen to Lemon without moving your shoulders along to, like, the, you know, the danceability of it in so many ways. I get, like, I'm smiling right now. I get, like, flustered talking about Lemon because it genuinely is one of the best songs of the year and possibly my favorite song on this whole record, even. I talked about Distracted by the Mona Lisa back when it was a single, and I went into how it was so refreshing to hear a song that is structured like this be done by a band such as the Callous Dow Boys, because they made something that is admittedly a bit more straightforward and simplistic while still retaining what it is that makes them so special. When you get into the track list, you'll notice that there are three songs that have Roman numerals attached to them. And I'll return to this concept later on because it all plays directly into the closing song. Schizophrenia Legacy is the first real track that you hear on the album, and it throws, like, literally everything at you that makes the Callous Dow Boys who they are, and, like, in terms of aggression, wackiness, and all that good shit. Like, the song can be battering your face in 1 second, and then the next, there's this jazz-like break that makes you remember, like, oh yeah, I'm listening to one of the most unique and non-linear bands in the world today. I think Full Moon Guidance is another highlight for this record, and it has those clean sections from Carson that are mixed in so well with the calamity going on around, and I think it's going to be one of those songs that, even though I like it so much already, I am going to learn to love it even more over time. Now, there is one song on the record that I gave a 4.2 instead of a 5 for the review on Instagram and Twitter, and that was Body Horror for Birds. I like the concept of the song a lot, and I think at its core, it was a good idea, but my thing was just that it felt to me like an interlude that should have gone on for 1 minute, but it instead is almost 6 minutes long, and it did momentarily take me out of the flow of the record, but that derailment doesn't last long whatsoever, because the second half of the album afterwards packs the same kind of punch as the first half, and maybe even more in some areas, like Idiot Temptation Force and Douchebag Safari. So then we start to work our way towards the end of the album, and I mentioned a little bit ago that there were some songs with Roman numerals next to them. The opening song, which is One Collection of Forgotten Dreams, has the intercom voice talking to the listener as if they're entering this museum. And in it, the voice mentions that there was an additional film tape marked 3 Country Song in Reverse, and it was, like, just recently discovered. So right from the start of the album, you are conditioned as a listener to look at Country Song in Reverse as something of like a myth and like larger than life. And you immediately start thinking to yourself, like, what is Country Song in Reverse then? Like, what is it about that song that made it to where the opening track needed to tell the listener, like, hey, we found this new song for you guys later on. And then so right before Country Song in Reverse, there is 2 Opt Out. And at the end of that song, you get that voice again, and I'm going to read, like, word for word, bar for bar, what it says to set up the closer. We strongly encourage those who are sensitive to graphic content or easily unsettled to proceed with caution or perhaps consider a different path through the Museum of Failure. But for those who choose to finish through the true ending of I Don't Want to See You in Heaven, please remember what you are about to witness is meant to challenge, provoke, and above all, remind us of the weight of our collective actions and inaction. And then you get into Country Song in Reverse, and it spends the first, like, maybe 2.5 minutes or so really building itself up and setting the tone and the atmosphere. And it's almost like horror movie like in some ways, because you're just sitting there and it's like you still don't know what you're about to hear. You know that there was this extended build up for it, you just don't know, like, what is it really going to do to you. And then you get into the meat and the bones of this song, and you understand that it is the personification of everything that the Callous Dow Boys have ever done in their career. It is the most complete song ever released by this band. It feels epic. It feels larger than life. You have no idea what direction you are going to be thrown into next for every second that you listen to Country Song in Reverse. And then by the end of it, you take the heavy aspects of the Callous Dow Boys and you actually mix in, I hit my microphone right now, sorry. You mix in the jazz elements, and it's very, like, quirky and weird and fun and like almost Mr. Bungle like in some ways. And by the time I finished Country Song Universe, I felt like still kind of amazed and taken aback by the fact that a record by the fucking Callous Dowboys could make me feel this way. And I said earlier that when I reviewed Celebrity Therapist, I reviewed it favorably, but it didn't age well over time. There is no possible way that I see that same thing happening to I Don't Want to See You in Heaven. I think this album has connected to me in the same way that I have seen the Callous Dowboys connect with so many other people around me in the scene. And again, to some extent, it was a case where I had to look within me and be like, do I not get this band? Am I the issue? And now I look at it like, yeah, it was. Hi, it's me, I'm the problem, it's me, all that type of shit. Yeah, that's what it was like being not even like a detractor of the Callous Dowboys, because I never was. I was just somebody who did not get into them to the same extent that so many others did. But now, having made my way through I Don't Want to See You in Heaven time and time again the last couple of days, I get it now. I understand it now. I know what the Dowboys hype is, and I am full-fledged in that camp now. I Don't Want to See You in Heaven is an amazing album by ultimately an amazing band, and it is just so fucking unique and special and different, and it feels like in a lot of ways this album challenges the idea of what anybody right now can perceive alternative music to be, because I guarantee you that there is a lot of this album that is everything but what you expect alternative music to be. Okay, I'm looking through what albums are left to get through, the other four. I'm going to bring this up now, and we're going to talk about Afterglow by Sleep Theory. And I'm going to do so without playing a clip from the album to, like, transition into the review, you know, the way that I normally do with everything. Okay, here's the deal with Sleep Theory. I'm, like, getting comfortable on my sofa right now. Don't mind me. All right. So I reviewed the album last Saturday, I believe it was, maybe Sunday, but I reviewed the album at some point over the weekend, had a lot of great things to say in the write-up about it. I enjoyed my time listening to the album, and it was all great, you know, tremendous. Then earlier this week, there was a tour announced by a band that I don't want to make mention of by name, for different reasons. And Sleep Theory was on the bill, and here's my thing, okay? You do what you want to with your career, you know. You have the choice to take whatever tour you want to. You have the choice to make your money however you want to. And by all means, go out there and make your money. You know, get your music out there, play arenas, do your thing. That's fine. But you have to understand that when you do those kinds of things, there will be people in your fan base who do not take too kindly to that kind of action. And so, if there's anybody out there who, you know, was excited for this album, and now their excitement has diminished because of this stuff, I think that's completely fair and reasonable and justifiable. And so, you know, for those reasons, I don't want to, like, explicitly glorify this record right now. I'm still going to review it because, you know, I listened to the album. The review is on Instagram and Twitter. Like, you know, there is an online paper trail showing me gassing up this record. So that's what I'm going to do for a little bit right now. But I'm just putting it out there that there are reasons why some people might be staying away from Sleep Theory and Afterglow for right now. I think it's all really valid. I like Sleep Theory a lot. I really, really do. The first time that I was, like, really, really exposed to their music was when I saw them open for Beartooth last year in February. And I had listened to Numb and Fallout on Spotify before, but I guess, like, being there in person and, like, really feeling the stage presence of everybody in the band, I was like, okay, there is something here. Like I can really sense that there is something within Sleep Theory, and it should be exciting to watch it all blossom. And that's pretty much what it had been since that show. They released a couple of singles here and there leading up to this record. I've talked about some of them. I've gassed up, I believe, like, Static and Three before. Three was one that, like, I was really, really interested and excited to get into when talking about it on the show a couple weeks ago now. I think Three is, like, this, you know, massive arena style banger that really plays to the strength of Sleep Theory and the strength of that genre overall. I think Static acts as like this incredible opener for the album. Stuck in My Head, it literally is that, you know, that kind of song that's meant to like get stuck in your head and you just find yourself singing along to it at random points. I think the song excels in that regard. The title track for Afterglow, it's like this really, really solid and gripping take on the idea of like a metalcore ballad. I kind of compare it a little bit to maybe Seize the Day by Avenged Sevenfold, and not in terms of the way that it sounds, but just in the sense that like it is a ballad that exists around this really, really fine and, you know, solid piece of work, body of music, and it ended up being one of my favorite songs on the record. I think Parasite is very catchy. I think Paralyze is another great song. Words Are Worthless, tremendous closer. I love the way that the album is bookended by that as the ending and then Static as the beginning. Sleep Theory just like really delivered on something that I think was really special. And I've said this before about other bands, you know, within this kind of like alternative rock stratosphere. I don't always need bands to be like innovative or unique in any way. I just need you to take whatever it is that you're doing and do it well. And I think that's exactly what Sleep Theory did with Afterglow. They take what is to some maybe a very standard and generic sound, but I think they like gave it enough of a positive spin sonically to where I can listen to this album and not be bored and not find it to be, you know, very like mundane the way that some people might listen to, you know, other alternative rock albums. I know I am somebody who the idea of like, you know, almost dad rock in some ways, it's not super appealing to me. I get the appeal of it, but it's not for me. Sleep Theory, I don't feel that way about them. I think they took everything that they wanted to make out of Afterglow and they excelled with it. And I would love to be like more celebratory about this project and this record. And I would love to give it the treatment that I do other records on this show. It's just a little bit hard and not appropriate to do so right now, I guess is my main point. But again, musically, sonically, I think this album lived up to every expectation that I had for it. And I generally do love it. Okay, let's see here. Okay, the next album I'm going to go over is one that I saw a lot of excitement for on the timeline and in Discord and any other channel that I am plugged into, and for great fucking reason. There Is a Whole World Out There by Arm's Length. There has been an unfortunate lack of Arm's Length discussion on this show before, and not really for any good reason. I had the chance to talk about and review their 2022 album, Never Before Seen, Never Again Found, back when it dropped, but I didn't, because it came out on a day where I think like 10 other bands and projects dropped something, and this was at a time where the job I was working in was very suffocating in terms of free time in my personal life to get to reviews, so I skipped out on reviewing the album for that reason, but I did at least listen to it in my own time, and I liked it a lot. So I've been eager for another opportunity to be able to gas up Arm's Length, and I got exactly that through There Is a Whole World Out There. The trifecta of singles that span from Funny Face to You Ominously End to The Weight were all massive successes in terms of setting the stage for this album from the standpoint of its emotional weight, no pun intended, and just, you know, the catchy-ass rhythms and melodies that this band can produce seemingly at the snap of a finger. Funny Face in particular is the one that I kept returning to because it gives this like melancholic sense of nostalgia that I can't really put into other words or turn my head away from. Like, it instantly hooked me, while like also making sure that this record is something that I would pay full attention to and not try to deny. I love how the album opens with The World because of its ability to be like aggressive and emotional all at once, and I think that is the kind of energy that needed to be established right from the jump on this album. Fatal Flaw, which is the second track, is another one of those songs that has such a like moving rhythm and structure, and it like, I'm trying to figure out the best way to say it. It kind of like very, I don't know, man, like weirdly makes the song sound fun, even though lyrically it's anything but fun. I think Palinopsia is another one of those songs that feels so powerful and destructive and like a mission statement of sort for where the band is right now and the strength they possess as potential faces of the emo genre in modern times. And I would even extend that notion to another song on the record, Early Onset, which is entirely acoustic and I think possibly stands out as the most emotionally moving moment on the record, which covers so much fucking ground. I think it's just something about the way that Alan's voice complements the soft guitar tones while there are these faint bits of strings behind it all that makes the perfect formula for Early Onset to strike as one of the biggest accomplishments on this record. I think above all else, it really feels like the band finds their voice throughout the album, and that's what helps Haley and Morning Person come across as the perfect 1-2 punch to end this album on and like be something that can be there for a listener. Like, as cliche as that might sound, I can listen to this album and understand that if I was hearing it when I was, you know, 14, 15 years old and like kind of struggling with certain things personally and not really knowing my place in the world or what I want to do or be and anything like that, having an album like There's a Whole World Out There would have meant, and again, no pun intended, guys, the fucking world to me. And I hope that it can have that effect on anybody out there right now who needs an album like this to be a crutch for them and some sort of like a shining star in the blurry night sky. I think this album has the ability to be that for somebody. And, you know, even being, you know, who I am right now at 30 years old hearing this album, I can still like resonate with it. I can still feel the emotional force and gravity that this album holds within it, and it's definitely something truly special and remarkable. I think that's the best way to summarize just who Arm's Length are. They are remarkable and fucking special. We're almost at the end, almost at the finish line. Two more records to get through, and I'm going to introduce one of them right now. It is Will You Haunt Me With That Same Patience by Barry Tomorrow. All right, so this ended up being the one album for the week that I did not review favorably, and I truthfully saw that coming just because of the very up and down trajectory that I myself have had with Barry Tomorrow throughout their tenure that probably exceeds the amount of time that some of you guys listening have spent as fans of this scene. Like, I remember being in like fucking, you know, high school around 2010, 2011, and having friends who were like just all about Barry Tomorrow and the promise that the band was showing. And in all honesty, I never really understood it. They have songs that I do enjoy, but as an overall unit, Barry Tomorrow has missed the mark for myself more than they've ever delivered. And I think that is something that I used to attribute to Jason Cameron's vocals. Like, I can recognize that He is an immeasurably talented vocalist with a powerful tone, and that worked for a lot of people, but it more often than not didn't really do much for me. He departed the band a couple of years ago, and from there, Tom Prendergast came on board as the band's new clean vocalist, and I was pretty hopeful that from there, a switch up could happen where I start to enjoy Bury Tomorrow at a level I never really had before. From what I can remember of their 2023 album, The Seventh Son, I probably had more moments of joy on that record than any of Bury Tomorrow's previous work, so I remain optimistic afterwards. But then once new material started surfacing in 2024, I started to kind of like feel myself having a similar disconnect to the songs that I did the other material by the band. Like, I thought Villain Arc was fine, but nothing that I ever really returned to. What If I Burn was especially disappointing because I didn't really like the way that Tom sounds in the chorus. Like, it just detached me from having the opening to connect with that song, and it wasn't really until Forever the Night that was, you know, there was finally a single that I thought was of tremendous quality, and it gave me hope for the rest of the album. I think right off the bat, Will You Haunt Me With That Same Patience starts off on one of its strongest notes with To Dream to Forget. Like, this is a fucking magnificent and stellar opening song, and it checks off every box that I could distinguish as the strengths of Bury Tomorrow and the things about this band that I do enjoy from time to time. I think everyone sounds like they're on top of their game in this song, and there are two other specific moments on the album that I can sense that same level of ambition in. One of them I already mentioned, which was Forever the Night, and then the other is Wasteland. Like, truly amazing choruses on those songs, and the energy is fucking sky high, but then the rest of the record fails to live up to those same heights. Like, even if nothing sounds exceptionally bad, it feels just lifeless at times. Like, there's just nothing interesting or exciting going on. For instance, I think Found No Throne sounds cool and it works well in the confines of a primarily acoustic song for Bury Tomorrow. But when I've already outlined that the key component to my attention and retention of the past material by the band is the instrumentation, having a song that purposely strips that element away isn't going to do anything beneficial, in my opinion. And then with some songs like Yokai and Silence Isn't Helping Us, I can sense that there are probably good ideas at play here, but it's like, it just sounds very like monotone in some ways. And I really wanted to like this album because I've always wanted to like Bury Tomorrow. I have gone into every single release ever by this band with the mindset of like, okay, this time they're going to win me over. This time it's going to happen. It's going to be different. And once again, I'm just like, you know, this doesn't do anything for me. It's not interesting. It's not moving. It sounds fine, like, at a base level. Like, again, nothing here is actually bad. It's just not interesting. And I'm sure that at some points in the future, like, this album is going to feel non-existent to me. And maybe it would be better if the album was just straight up bad, because then it would at least be memorable. I don't know when is the next time after I finish this review I'm ever going to think about this album again. And, you know, aside from the three songs I mentioned that are really, really good, there's nothing else here for me to sink my teeth into, and I really, really, really do not like that I feel that way about Bury Tomorrow. And now I get into the final record for the episode, and a very special one at that. It is Coda by Novelis. I can't. this truly did end up becoming one of the most anticipated albums of the year for me. And that is astonishing considering where I left off in terms of albums by novelists. Because after 2022's Deja Vu, I'm not going to say that I thought the band was cooked, but it definitely felt like a change was needed in order for the band to ever have a real chance at prospering again. And I hate that I felt that way because I like Tobias a lot. I feel like I had an attachment to his material because he was coming from Alaska and I love that band. But the chemistry just was not really there with novelists. And like I said, I thought a change of some kind was necessary. And that change did end up coming in 2023 when Camilo Contreras became the new vocalist for the band. And for anybody who has been into novelists for an extended period of time, her name should have been familiar instantly because she was a guest on the title track to C'est la vie from the band's 2020 album. And that is honestly one of my favorite songs of all time, and a song that provides me with like so much comfort and love because it was there for me at a troubling time in my personal life. So there was already a connective thread from myself to material by novelists that specifically featured Camille, and now she was going to be spearheading this act. And I actually did get to see the band in person with Camille when they opened for Era a little more than a year ago by this point now. And they were fucking fantastic. And that alone drew up this increasing excitement within me about their future. Where the next stop came for novelists was in December through the double single of Coda and KO. I have had more time to spend with Coda than any other song that I reviewed on Ulterior in 2025, because Coda was the first song I listened to for 2025 reviews. When I finished the year-end episodes for 2024, very first brand new song I heard was Coda. And it immediately just blew me away. And it made me just so fucking goddamn happy that novelist with Camille as the vocalist was able to, you know, invigorate me and like create this spark within me towards the band and my excitement for the band and all that shit. Coda is one of the best songs of the year that I've heard. I'm gonna be honest with you guys, even though Coda is a 2024 song technically, it might do some damage for year-end stuff for the songs series. And even then, I feel like I'm underselling right now, like, how much I actually like Coda. I fucking love the title track to Coda here. It's just so goddamn catchy and rhythmic. And, like, everything about it, from a presentation standpoint to the way it sounds, like, everything about Coda and what it represents, I have just completely, I'm even fucking lost for words now. The song's been out for like fucking 5 months. I love this song with every ounce of my being. I fucking love Coda. Afterwards, once we got into 2025 in the timeline, the band continued to just thrive over and over. All for Nothing and Say My Name excelled as singles for Coda, especially Say My Name, which ended up being the opener for the album. I think it sets the tone and the pace perfectly for what is to come by providing listeners with what I believe is one of the best and catchiest choruses they're going to hear all year. There is a song early on in the tracklist called Maldición de la Bruja, and it's immediately separated from the rest of the songs here because Camille's inclusion of lyrics in her native tongue and just, you know, the way that she is able to effortlessly transition from a verse in Spanish to the traditional novelist chorus that she takes charge of. In Heaven is one of the more emotional entries into this record, and I think it acts as the perfect midway point for the album. The aggression that you get off of Adam and Eve and CRC are the perfect contrast to 78 Rue, which feels so like atmospheric and ambient, and I really loved getting to hear that side of the band. Sleepless Nights ended up being my favorite of the non-singles on the album, and I think that's because it felt to me like the perfect storm of what I love about Novelist as a project right now, and what it is about metalcore that has always kept me coming back to it. Like, there is something about the guitar work in this song that makes me think of the guitar work I would hear in metalcore growing up, and so I guess in that sense, it feels like a throwback while still being the perfect snapshot of who this band is today and how they fit into the upper echelon of metalcore. And it is a spot in the upper echelon that I feel like has been, you know, brewing and in some ways like waiting for them. Like, that top tier of metalcore right now has been waiting for Novelists to reach that level. And we've seen time and time again the potential that this band has shown, and like how, you know, they take like, you know, 10 steps forward and maybe two back, and it's like this weird up and down cycle with their trajectory. And then now off of Coda, it feels like they finally have the body of work that is going to be what they need to let them get through that threshold and become the fucking juggernaut band that I know they have the ability to become. And it is off the backs of some of the catchiest songs of the entire year, and off the back of a woman who has like stepped up to the plate in a way that new vocalists, you know, sometimes aren't able to. But Camille has become a dominant voice in not just, you know, the scene, but the fucking world of music for that matter. And Novelist right now feels like 10 times the band that they've been before. You know, no disrespect to Tobias, no disrespect to Mateo. Every vocalist before Camille has played their role and played their part in helping set the foundation for what Novelist was going to become. But now with Camille there, it feels like they are finally, you know, reaching that surface level of like where they were destined to be. And I think that is like one of the brightest things for me to think about with this album. It finally feels like Novelist is where they are meant to be, and it is because of Coda. And that's it. That's every album and song for me to review. This outro is a do-over from what I had originally recorded because of the news that surfaced about the plane crash that, you know, very tragically took the lives of Dave Shapiro and Daniel Williams. And like I said, like, at the top of the episode, it's just been, you know, a really, really tough week for the scene. You know, what happened to them today, what happened to Adam Monday. It's a lot. It's a lot for anybody to deal with, a lot for anybody to, you know, intake and process and all that sort of shit. And I'm just going to reiterate what I said earlier. Like, just, you know, be there for your people. Like, hug them, tell them that you love them, do what you gotta do, because it really, really could all be gone in an instant. I know none of us like really think about that or take the time to think about it, because it sucks and it's scary and we don't want to think about it, but, you know, that's the reality of the world that we live in. And I really do not want this episode to end on a downer note. It just feels like there's no other way to end the episode besides just being like raw and real and upfront with you guys. You know, life sucks sometimes, and these are big examples of how that, you know, can be, how that can be. I'm really, really trying to think of a way to not end the episode on a downer note. There might not be a way. This is just, you know, the reality. Rest in peace, Adam Raimi. Rest in peace, Dave Shapiro. Rest in peace, Daniel Williams. Rest in peace, the other people on the plane whose lives were lost. Best wishes to, you know, their family, their friends. Again, the episode does include the link to the GoFundMe page for Adam's family. So, you know, if you have the ability, please, please consider, you know, helping them out at this time. I'm going to go now, edit this episode, do what I got to do. And, you know, hopefully when I get back on the microphone next week, it'll be under much, 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 much better circumstances than this week. Okay, here's what I will say. If this episode was able to be like any kind of a distraction for any of you guys, not just from, you know, these tragic scene events, but maybe anything that is going on in your own personal life, If this episode was able to be a distraction in any way, that is the biggest possible compliment that I could ever, you know, feel or receive, because this whole show was, you know, meant to be an escape for myself. And if it can be that for any of you guys out there, then that's something that I really, really, really don't ever want to take for granted. I'm going to get out of here now. Thank you guys so much for listening. And again, we will try picking this back up next week on a better note. Thank you guys. There's a glitch in the system. If you blink when you do this thing, then you miss them. Rebel King, I hit all the rings, you can kiss them. R.I.P. the layers 6 feet if you diss them. There's a glitch in the system. If you blink.